Welcome to the AI Business Podcast, where we feature conversations with interesting guests at the intersection of artificial intelligence and business.
Hi, I'm Tom Tolley for AI Business. I'm excited to welcome to the podcast Tim Russell. He's the Chief Technologist of CDW. Welcome, Tim.
Hi, Tom. Thanks, and welcome. Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Sounds good. So first of all, tell us about what you do for CDW.
Yeah, sure. So as you said, I am the Chief Technologist. Specifically, I'm the Chief Technologist for the Modern Workspace in our UK organisation. I lead our UK Modern Workspace engagement, covering everything from productivity and collaboration through to IoT, Internet of Things, and smart technology.
I know that CDW has over 100,000 products and services. I mean, it's a massive organization and 250,000 customers all over the world. So given that you have this big base, what are they talking about when it comes to generative AI? What are some of the themes that are emerging?
It's a hot topic. A lot of people kind of have their own ideas, but I quite often ask what everyone else is doing, and it's logical. Now, with the UK subset of customers I speak to, it really falls into three areas. Security of data, obviously. You know, where is my data? Who has access to it? How do I prevent inappropriate use or release of that data? The FOMO. Obviously, it's such a big buzzword. Everyone is doing it. Are we behind the curve? Are we late? And yeah, the answer to that one, obviously, is just because everyone is talking about it, it doesn't actually mean everyone is doing it or is in any way ready to do it. And if they did start doing it, it would probably be a bad idea because all of the background stuff's not been done. So security FOMO. And the third one is confusion. Generative AI being in the forefront of the awareness because of, you know, ChatGPT and that, businesses couldn't fully grasp why they needed a generative capability. Yeah, there's a lot of conversations that spun out of that. Other notable conversations are around releasing time. You know, when should we and how do we get there? How quickly should we get there? Which engine do we use? How do we know it's the right one? And these are a lot of conversations that I think are going to continue on for some time, especially as development continues. The last one I want to note, and this is quite often we bring this to the conversation talking to our customers, is how do you benchmark AI effectiveness? How do you understand when you know you're doing it well enough to understand what AI has delivered as a difference? You know, we want to drive a wider adoption of things like RPA without creating a shadow IT environment. And that's something that's been going on for a long time. And we want to drive efficiencies and improve an individual quality. But how do we understand that we're being successful? How can we be subjective in that matter? So, you know, the three main topics, but then also understanding that if you're on that journey, how do we then measure our level of success?
Yeah, those are all excellent points, especially the one about confusion. it's just every day there is something new when it comes to generative AI. And, you know, as for CDW's own journey for AI or generative AI, what are the lessons that you're taking from that?
It's quite a lot from my own personal perspective as well. Yeah, let's get the perception right first. AI isn't anything new. It's been around for a long time. From, you know, even those that remember it, Clippy, love it or hate it. You know, to the earliest contact center automations, I loved Clippy, by the way. AI's ability has been ever increasing as we increase computing power. The likes of Power Automate, which is where we started on those RPA journeys for a lot of people. And in the last few years, we've seen it coming into smartphones. You know, we're taking it for granted, some of the stuff that phones do for us now. You know, image augmentation, for example, and a lot of photographic capabilities on smartphones. So when it came to the latest understanding, and I say the understanding and the term AI, I found that initially customers' perspectives were, why do we need people to create random images apart from the purpose of creating memes, which is obviously very much the first concept of generative AI. But then it moved on, and then we started seeing AI content being generated, articles, written content, images, music. And this moved customer conversations onto the, why don't we just let all of our work be done by AI and get rid of all of our staff? Which kind of at that point, people were thinking, well, that we're going to lose our jobs, that's going to go wrong. But then obviously we then started having the problem with inappropriate data. We had hallucinations, and then businesses started saying, oh, wait, we can't use AI to do everything. How do we now use AI constructively, correctly? How do we protect the quality of the data? And throughout this conversation, for me, it's always gone back to something that has been as long as I've been in IT is why? it's not a message that's changed for many, many years. Why do you want that technology? Why do you want technology X? Why do you want AI? And I guess the main lesson that we've learned from all of this is one we already knew. Technology for the sake of it is not a healthy business decision. You need to be really clear on what you're going to get out of AI before you even start looking at the who, the what, the where, the why.
Yeah, that's definitely an important lesson. Probably there's a lot of companies that are not taking that lesson because they're jumping on the bandwagon when it comes to generative AI, just because maybe the CEO says, we got to do it. You know, that's, you know, from the top. So, you know, CDW has a long storied history. It goes back to the PC revolution of the 1980s. I remember the catalog, by the way. I think I bought some software and product through that. But what it means is that, you know, just like any company, there's legacy systems that have been built up over the years. You buy different companies, acquisitions, and, you know, so there's some technical debt. So what has that meant for implementing AI? Or maybe you could talk about that is just in general about that, you know, because a lot of companies are in that boat right now where they want to do something, but it is, you know, there's some constraints there.
Yeah. And again, it's not something we're going to get away from. If we think, who remembers, you know, listening to this podcast, who remembers the conversation? We're going to lose fax machines. Trust me, they're still there. 30 years ago, probably that conversation started. The advent and the adoption of emails, we thought faxes, thing of the past, we've still got them. You're never going to fully remove legacy. What you're going to find is it's going to be moved into niche areas. It shouldn't stop your journey. It's not always going to be a case of rip and replace for the sake of a new tech buzzword. As I said earlier, you know, just doing it for the sake of it isn't really the right business decision. Removing your legacy equipment. And I always go and look at things like contact centers. Contact centers, and I've worked on some massive contact centers in my time, they're not the thing you change quickly because they are the absolute cornerstone of your business, particularly where you're having customer interactions, either internally or externally. So those legacy systems have been born out of a necessity, but they've remained because of a reliance. So when it comes to the journey to AI, first the why, quite obviously, but it's a question of how can you reduce risk to your business from changing a legacy environment? How can you implement or include levels of AI? And AI, you know, it's not something you buy and it's red or blue. It's a level of integration that you decide on that is relevant to your business to deliver against your business goals. And when that is put up against a legacy system, you have to understand, what am I going to get out of combining these two technologies? Or in some cases, it is quite literally a case of, yeah, we can't make these two work together. We have to accept that we're going to start a new level of journey. But what we can do is we can take the experience, the knowledge, and the reason for the existence of the legacy system to actually improve our level of AI adoption and development in our next level technical solution on that journey.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier about the AI and smartphones. You know, Samsung has recently announced that they're implementing generative AI in their phones. It'll do real-time translation for foreign language, which actually seems like a pretty neat feature. Can help write text and can help with images and so forth. I don't know if you've seen some of these devices, but what are your thoughts, or just in general, what are your thoughts about, you know, how this may impact smartphones, if any, and, you know, could this provide a new avenue for growth for that market?
Yeah, it's quite interesting. So if you look at the smartphone market, it was very much the last couple of years, my perspective was, you know, which camera is better than the other. Now, it's funny you should say this. I was actually in Japan 2 weeks ago with an Android device with the capability to offer real-time translation. I neither speak or can read Japanese. So for me, it was a godsend. I can actually turn on this phone and real time on my screen or read into my ear. I decided to have textual version. The conversations that were happening around me were being presented in real time. Now, we already take that for granted on our desktop PCs, but I was in a foreign country, not connected to the network, and the device had the capability, the MPU, CPU, and GPU could do all of this. It could real time translate the language around me. Not only that, I could look at a menu and I could use it real time to tell me what that menu was offering. And if I wanted, I could also use that device to take my voice and speak in a native language to the individual there, telling them what I wanted or what I needed. I couldn't judge its accuracy, but considering people weren't confused, it was amazing. So answer your question, bringing that capability into the device and the conversations I've had with smartphone providers, it's not just about this translation. It's the fact that the AI capability in that device can also look at you as an individual and how you use that device. Which applications do I offload? Which applications do I back end? How do you use your phone throughout the period of the day, for example? How can I protect the battery to give it to you, let's say on your commute home, so you can watch your Netflix film you've downloaded? AI will start looking and adapting. And this is where neural learning comes in, to change how your device provides its services to you. And I think that is going to start being a game changer in how these devices are used. And we have to be honest, you know, the smartphone has got, I think the last statistic I saw was on average 2 devices for every human on the planet, smart devices, which is why these companies are focusing on putting all of this packaged up capability. You know, as I said, you've got on-chip capabilities now with CPU, GPU, and NPU within a single chip, within an extremely small, powerful form factor that people are taking for granted in their hand. It's powering virtual desktops on your in glasses, for example. All of that capability, I think, will start delivering a massive impact to us as end users. And as they kind of get it right, because I'm not going to say it's going to be right from day one, as they start getting it better and better, we're going to find more and more use cases for this power that's now in our pocket.
That is pretty cool about the translation. I have a feeling that that might be one of the next killer apps when it comes to generative AI. You know, we're also looking at AI PCs. They're coming down the road, and Intel is building generative AI capabilities into its own chips. AMD and Qualcomm is doing the same. You know, I don't know if you've taken a look at these devices as well, but if so, kind of your thoughts just how we may see some changes in the PC market and the laptop market.
Yeah, I think it's going to go beyond the hardware. So if we look at Microsoft's the obvious one, if we look at how they're positioning Windows 11 and Copilot, Copilot is Microsoft's term for AI now. Windows 11 has kind of become synonymous with Copilot. It's baked into it. We get an indication of where the PC market is going to go, because the OEM providers, Microsoft Software, obviously, they're going to align their development to this. Now, if we encompass what I was saying about the smartphone, the intelligent power management, application optimization, etc., I believe we can expect a more overarching AI-supported interface for users. AI in a lot of cases is application focused or specific. You know, I'm using this application, it's got AI. I'm using this application, it's got AI. I believe we're going to be moving up to an application independent approach where your interface, your operating system, your mobile device, whatever it might be, that becomes your overarching AI capability that looks at your applications. It looks at how you're operating across multiple platforms and can deliver productivity improvements, productivity enhancements, and advice in your way of working. Just imagine, you know, you're using your mobile device or your physical laptop or your desktop PC, and you have a repetitive action. You copy an email into a calendar invite across 2 applications. You open Gmail, you copy an email, and you put it into a calendar invite in Outlook. AI could find ways to automate that process to make you more productive, because it sees an email with a subject line addressed in a certain way, it can apply this level of capability that says, hey, I can do this for you. That capability being baked into the device, be it a PC, be it a tablet, be it a phone, I believe that's where we're going to start seeing the biggest change, and why these, regardless of the AMD, the Intel, the Qualcomm, why this capability is going to have to be baked into your physical device you're using, because it's going to step back from 15 different versions of AI across all the different applications you're using to one top level overarching productivity enhancement AI. And again, that's how I would see the biggest benefit coming to us as users of the systems.
Yeah, Humane is a buzzy startup. They've created this AI pin that's a wearable. And we're also, you know, we're going to see something from Apple with its Vision, you know, and VR, and you know, all these companies are, you know, jumping into these new form factors. You know, it's been tough to get adoption beyond the smartphone. Putting stuff on your head and, you know, walking around is just kind of a dicey proposition. The pin sounds kind of interesting, but, you know, is that, is that just too new or too weird? So what are your thoughts just on, you know, this convergence of AI with these new devices and maybe rethinking the form factor?
30 years ago, the mobile phone was something we talked into. Now it's something we do everything with. I heard a term, I was at a forum I was presenting at a couple of months back now, and somebody used this term screen stabber. And what I realized is we are a generation of screen stabbers. We're happy prodding a plastic or a glass screen to get stuff done. Now, you say about Humane, we've got the Apple Watch as well, which recognizes gestures. You know, we've had some of these in our cars. I had a car recently that supported gestures instead of me physically pressing buttons on the screen. It's a generational change. I think Humane, yeah, and I've been following it closely, they've got some good ideas. There's going to be some underlying issues, inclusivity, battery life, all the usual stuff that we can expect. But I think there's going to be a generational acceptance, and we might be the last generation of screen snappers. We might be moving on to that next level of integrating and working with systems in a slightly more hands-off perspective. And we've got coffee machines in our office that we don't actually need to touch the button. From 2 centimeters ago, it reacts to the presence of your finger. I'm reading a book at the minute, funnily enough, called The Departure by Neil Asher. And he talks about a bone phone in an individual's head and chip enhancements directly connected to the brain. Now, this is all science fiction. And I think with the likes of Humane, it's going to be an early adopter kind of journey initially, but we're going to see a generational change as we move through the next 5-10 years. People are going to become more used to not having a physical phone in their hand. I've got a box here with some heads-up display glasses. You know, people are getting used to this fact of not actually having to physically look at a screen, but having it omnipresent, always available. And a Humane, they've played in quite well to that. As I say, the Apple Watch, they've got the gesture recognition. All of this, I think it's going to have to level out so we understand the same. You're not going to have different gestures for different systems. You're going to have to start finding a leveling out and a standard maybe. But I honestly think they're onto a good thing. It's just getting the level of adoption up. You know, imagine if you were, for example, talking into wearable glasses. You could be talking to an individual just as you talk to an AI, has scanned a person's face, matched to who they are, picked up LinkedIn, M365 organizational contact list, last conversation you had. How much gray matter would we release by not having to hold on to all this content and information? How much of this can we start picking up? And Humane started on that journey as well. Let's see what comes out of it, but I absolutely do support and encourage this alternate way of doing things, because eventually we're going to get bored of being screen stabbers. We're going to want to become that next generation.
I'll probably be one of those guys that cling to my faxes with my screen. You know, to a little bit more, the less glamorous part of generative AI is data. You know, it needs tons of data, but we've already scoured the internet. What are your thoughts on that? And also just kind of this, you know, as we have, you talk about the bone phone and all these ideas, you know, all this data being collected, but it's being collected about ourselves, you know, and it's maybe getting more physical and more biochemical. How is this going to play with privacy and security going forward? I mean, it just seems like, you know, the stakes are just getting higher and higher. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's enough stories out there already since the rise of ChatGPT that's driving both a fear, but also a focus on security and reliability of data first. An interesting statistic, funny enough, about this plethora of data is, according to the report I read recently, only 2% of global data is analyzed. So the question is, are we storing too much data or are we failing to utilize it, regardless of the inappropriate one? We need to focus on what we're collecting. Are we collecting it for the right reasons? You know, security needs to focus on this relevant and applicable collection of storage and the utilization of that data. Yes, we are going to be more aware of data being collected, but it already is at the minute without us even realizing. Our mobile devices, smart speakers in our home, cookies in the background of websites, there is more data collected than we can possibly imagine right now. And it's quite scary when you look into it. But that data should be utilized to give us, as an end user, an improved experience. in the enterprise world, more than anything else, I think we need to ensure security of data within enterprise environments. We need to ensure that our models and data sources cannot be poisoned. We risk major hallucinations, and that is massively evolving. Imagine, for example, if your data set for a customer or a public or whatever it is, if you had one hallucination and you allowed that to become part of your foundation model, that will then start creating bigger and bigger hallucinations. My concern is data ownership, responsible use, and we've seen the UK government coming recently with the EU as well about responsible use of AI. We need to make sure that we don't have to rely on legislation, but as individuals, we're cognizant and in control of how our data is stored and utilized. And at various organizational levels, we also do that within the organization. And then ultimately, from a government legislation perspective, we need to make sure that the safeguards and the barriers are in place.
Yeah, CDW has a thriving IT services business. The company helps with building and deploying data platforms for all types of businesses. Do you have a case study about that, or kind of how you help customers with that process?
Yeah, so if I look at the AI as we can consider it, there's two kind of areas. There's the building of a capability, and there's a user enablement AI. Now, my space where I focus is on the user enablement space. And it's very early to draw specific conclusions, especially around the likes of Copilot and generative AI. But as you know, RPA, for me, a form of AI, has delivered productivity enhancements to its customers for some time. Being as we've been working with Microsoft in a pre-release of Copilot, I've been using my for self and several other colleagues within the organization for many months now. And from a personal perspective, we've both experienced but also been able to demonstrate that not only time, but also quality has been gained from the use of an ever-present second voice, an editor, if you want. I don't have a case study I could share. All I can say is from my own personal experience from using on a daily basis an AI tool, I found speed, quality, productivity have all increased in a degree that I would consider it a worthwhile investment in having these tools made available to individuals.
Yeah, I like that you bring up RPA. You know, I think it's been getting a bad rap because generative AI and AI. But, you know, generative AI has, you know, its pros and cons. You talked about hallucinations and, you know, it's about creativity. And when you're dealing with a process, you want to make sure, especially in a regulated environment, you want to make sure it's done right and it's done the same way every time. And it's going back to our earlier discussion about, you know, what's the problem to be solved, not to throw the latest technology up in the air and see where it lands. So I really like that concept. But I would like to end the conversation on my last question, just kind of take out the crystal ball and, you know, get your insights and some of the trends to look forward to in the next year or two that you're seeing coming around.
Well, I kind of look in the next year and I think there's going to be, dare I say, a little bit mundane. It's about adaption, it's readiness, it's security. If I look out a little bit further, I've got a somewhat, forgive me, that, you know, if you want blue sky, sort of up there sci-fi, I see NPUs becoming personalized. Now, the neural processing unit, for those who maybe don't know, it is a different way of learning and processing, very important to productive AI. What if the NPU became personally identifiable with you? What if it was virtualized across all of your interaction devices? What if it became synonymous with you regardless of where, how, and with what device you interact? Almost, dare I say, like a blockchain NPU that is linked to you, as in it's absolutely specific to you. It's from its first point of interaction has learned who and what you are and has become molded to become the second you, dare I say it that. What if the NPU became that capability across all of those devices? How much more powerful would we as an individual be if we had that level of capability? Now, I appreciate this is, for some, maybe a little bit science fiction, a little bit out there, but we're looking at how NPU is learning as a neural unit and the capabilities that are coming with that. Now, we don't want to lose it on one device and not have it on another. So I see a lot of the progress we're going to see in the short to medium term is building up to this capability of an identifiable NPU profile that will follow you across multiple devices. giving you the same look and feeling. And this could also be driven into interactions in government bodies, how we interact with other organizations, because you become known as what's your preference, how you like to work, and the such like. I believe that's honestly going to make a difference.
Well, Tim, that may be your dog or my dog. It's not my dog, but usually he usually barks like crazy.
Yeah, that's mine. Sorry, bad one. Yeah.
But this has been a great conversation. Thanks very much for being part of the AI Business Podcast.
Thank you, Tom. It's my pleasure.
To get more AI news and insights, visit our website at aibusiness.com. Until next time, thank you for listening.